You are Locked On MLB, your daily podcast on Major League Baseball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to Locked On MLB, your daily podcast covering Major League Baseball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Tommy Stokey. You can find my writing at LockedOnMLB.com. Soon you'll be able to find my writing at BetChicago.com. With some news coming out on Monday that sports betting is going to be legalized, or it's going to turn to the states to be legalized. We brought in Alex Kaloje to talk sports betting, how he thinks it'll the new laws will influence things. We talk some of his favorite bad beats. We talk about his Diamond Dynasty team on MLB The Show. We talk about the White Sox. He is a White Sox fan and what it's like being a White Sox fan during that rebuild. And it's kind of a fun conversation. Also, you get the exclusive story of Trevor Story striking him out when he was 10 years old. So that's always a good one. One of my favorite stories that he tells every single time Trevor Story is mentioned anywhere. So now you guys get to listen to it as well. Before we get to that, I want to take the first segment to look at Paul Goldschmidt and the pressure that he's going to be on to now perform with the news that's still coming on AJ Pollock and his thumb injury. And we looked at, you know, he's struggled before, and we all anticipate him being fine. Goldschmidt, that is. Pollock, some more bad luck after injuring his thumb in the ninth inning on Monday. So we'll talk about the Diamondbacks' six-game losing streak, and Paul Goldschmidt in Segment 1, followed by our interview with Alex Kaloje in Segment 2. So the Arizona Diamondbacks are a team that I've said multiple times on this podcast that I think that they are legit. I think they're for real, and they are the favorite, and they're going to win that division. That being said, that is all based on health, and terrible news yesterday. The Diamondbacks are hoping that it's not terrible and hope for the best, but AJ Pollock left with a thumb injury. They called it a thumb sprain, and he was supposed to see or is going to see a specialist on Tuesday. So there's no update so far, but the crazy thing is last year, May 15th, is when Pollock was diagnosed with a grade 1 groin groin injury, and he missed at least a month, I think, last year with that injury, and now May 15th, he's probably going to miss some time with the thumb injury. So it's up to Paul Goldschmidt now to pick things up, and he has really struggled both from numbers-wise and the overall eye test. They said on, you know, Buster Olney on Sunday Night Baseball had a really interesting stat, and I don't know if it's still true after yesterday, but that Goldschmidt, in like 63 or 64, 65 chances, had not had a hit off a fastball over 96 miles an hour. And when you watch him, it looks like he's just a second off, where his timing just isn't there. He's hesitant. He's not as aggressive on some of these pitches in the strike zone. And so I'm no hitting coach. I'm not going to pretend to know what Paul Goldschmidt needs to do. I can just tell you that he has 53 strikeouts, which is uncharacteristic at this point. He's hitting .211 with a .337 on base, four home runs in 147 at-bats. It's just he doesn't look the same. That being said, the last time I wrote something 2 years ago, the Diamondbacks were 17-23. They had a bunch of expectations coming off a solid 2015 season, and Goldschmidt was off to a slow start, not this slow, in 2016. And I have a story where I write that Paul Goldschmidt deserves some blame for the slow start. And it wasn't like, I don't think I was overly critical. That's not really my style, where I'm going to go newspaper columnist on somebody and go off on them. But the Diamondbacks were struggling. Paul Goldschmidt was struggling as the team's best player. He bears part of that responsibility. So I go to Chase Field that night, And as I'm walking into security, a bird pooped on my shirt walking into security. So I said I was never going to say anything bad about Paul Goldschmidt again. And this isn't saying anything bad. It's just saying he has been very good. And if Pollock's going to be out, he needs to step up, especially with Steven Souza struggling, although he did get a couple hits last night. So he's coming around. Jake Lamb is going to come back soon, and so that should help the lineup. But if Pollock has to miss time, it's up to Goldschmidt where he needs to step up, because you don't want to hang back and give the Dodgers a chance to catch up. You don't want to give the Giants a chance to get Madison Bumgarner back and feel like they have a chance. The Rockies are there too, so it's still a tough division, and you're on a 6-game losing streak. It's going to come down to Paul Goldschmidt has to start hitting, and he has to be the one that's going to carry this offense if AJ Pollock misses time. If he doesn't miss time, I mean, I don't think you expect Goldschmidt to hit like this all season. Obviously, when you look back at 2016, he had that slow start. He still finished with 24 home runs, a .411 on base, and hit .297. So where everybody says, you know, at the end of the year, Paul Goldschmidt's baseball card is going to look the same. Well, last year he had 36 home runs, drove in 120, .966 OPS. He struggles much longer. Those numbers aren't going to happen, especially with the humidor effects. Paul Goldschmidt, I've said this multiple times, I think before that terrible September that he had, Paul Goldschmidt was going to be the MVP in the National League. I believe that. He ended up finishing third. But he's got to start to pick it up, and he's got to be the one that carries that offense. I still think that they're the team to beat in the division. I just think that they're the most well-rounded team. They have the depth, although that depth is certainly being tested and will be tested even more if Pollock has to miss time. The other thing is, if Pollock misses time, you know the Diamondbacks are going to be patient with him. They always would rather take an extra week to make sure that someone is healthy, regardless of what it means for the team on the field. So they have confidence in their depth. They have confidence in their training staff, and they want to make sure that those guys are 100% healthy and not risk re-aggravating anything. So this is my message, that it's time for Paul Goldschmidt to turn back into Paul Goldschmidt, and I hope that next time I walk into Chase Field, that bird that was there before isn't there again, because I didn't really appreciate that. We're going to bring on Alex Kaloje here in a second. We talked some sports betting. We talked his favorite bad beats. I brought up a story from Monday where if you were on a certain side of a game, you probably didn't enjoy the ending. You get stuff like that all the time. I think it's fun to watch sports through that sports betting angle sometimes. I love checking the numbers to see, wow, did that home run mean anything for a total? The same thing in other sports too. When you see a last-minute touchdown, you see a buzzer-beating three, that doesn't matter. Usually somewhere it matters. So sports betting is going to be legal. It's going to be up to the states now, so we brought in Alex to talk about some of those things. We also talked White Sox. He's a White Sox fan, and I gave him the question of what will happen first. Will Eloy Jimenez and Michael Kopech be in the major leagues together, or will a non-Indians team be in first place in the AL Central? So we'll see what he has to say about that, but here is Alex Kaloje. All right, now we bring in Alex Kaloje to talk. Well, I'm not really exactly sure what we're going to talk about, but we're going to start with sports betting because you are the resident sports betting expert, I've decided.
Thank you.
With sports betting now being legal or on the track to being legal, what is your opinion on how it will affect the market and sports and how people bet on sports now? Will it have a big effect, little effect? What do you expect to see?
Well, obviously, the convenience is going to be there. Right when we heard it yesterday, the first thing I thought of was, "Holy crap, we're gonna all lose so much more money, and it's going to be great." And I think there are going to be more support groups. And and to be honest, I mean, yeah, there are people who went on sports betting. There are people who do it for a living, and there are people who make a salary off of it, and they depend on it, and they're really good at it because they've created models and they do it for a living. So, yeah, there's that. But then again, you know, for the common recreational better, it's going to be so much easier now to lose money, and you don't have to go through offshores, and you don't have to go through the hassle. So, you know, I joked about it yesterday, but, you know, there's just going to be a lot more losses with the convenience of it, depending on what the states do and what your respective state does. So, yeah, and obviously another thing is going to be the media. I think it's going to be huge, and I think we saw yesterday firsthand when Steve Kerr said he's going to take the Warriors plus 1.5. I just think it's going to be, yeah, he won. I mean, the guy's won in all lifetime. He's already off to a good start. But I don't think there's going to be that elephant in the room anymore when you're talking about sports broadcasting and talking about backdoor touchdowns and how it, you know, how the meaningless touchdowns, the meaningless home runs, how they are a little bit more meaningful for others out there. So I think we talk about more on broadcasting. But I think in the grand scheme of things, it's going to be huge for media. It's going to be a whole other branch. I think it's going to be widely talked about. And I think it's about freaking time, to be honest, Tom.
This is a baseball podcast, but how about day one, James Harden sells his soul so the under pushes last night as he fouls with 13 seconds left and either results in a push if you got 225 or you lost if you got 224?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's just the thing. I mean, I had a couple people in my mentions yesterday saying, see, we get sports betting legal and we already have James Harden following people and the under getting blown right out from under us. And it's like, yeah, well, there you go. You wanted sports betting legal? That's what you get. You get the beard hacking people down 30, and there you go. And fortunately, I'm going to be waiting on the sidelines a little bit here for football. So it's kind of nice to watch people kind of lose their minds over it while you're kind of just sitting there. But trust me, by the time the fall gets here, I will be a nervous wreck. I will be sharing stories left and right. I'll be gathering people around the campfire, and I will tell you stories that will create ulcers inside your body. So my turn will be coming up soon enough.
What are your what's your favorite type of baseball bad beat?
See, baseball is definitely a different sport when it comes to bad beats, because unlike basketball or football, there's no time. So you don't get something happening as time expires. So in my opinion, the worst bad beat you can get in baseball is if you have an over, and we'll say, for example, it's 8.5 and it's 5-3 at the end of one and you don't get a single run for the rest of the game. The reason I say that is because I've had it happen numerous times. I've had friends ordering drinks. I've had them high-fiving, and I'm the one that's sitting in the corner. I still got MLB Gamecast on. I'm waiting to see what guys are doing with runners on second and third, two outs. I've been there before 100 times, so that's probably my least favorite. I should say that's the worst bad beat. And then obviously another one too is, but this didn't happen to me because I don't bet unders, but if you have an under at, say, 8.5, and it's 7-1 in the ninth, first runner gets on in the
Hold
bottom
on,
of
stop.
The ninth.
Stop, I'm going to stop you because I have a story. If you took – so last night the Indians and Tigers play, and the total was 8.5. And so I was just paying attention because I cover baseball, so I need to know what the Indians and Tigers are doing. So it's 3-1 going into the eighth, right?
Mm-hmm.
8.5 is the number. Indians score in the top of the eighth, 3-2 going to the bottom of the eighth. Nico Goodrum, I don't even know if that's how you say his name, hits his second home run of the game. It's a 3-run homer, so it's a 3 spot in the bottom. So now it's 6-2.
Sure.
He was hitting like 180, I think, going into the game.
Of course.
So then top of the ninth. 6-2, number's 8.5. Out one, out two, you're down to two outs, right? Greg Allen. Greg Allen hits a triple. You maybe have never heard of Greg Allen. He was an Arizona Fall Leaguer, but Greg Allen triples.
Top prospect.
Brandon Guyer, the ninth hitter, is hitting 157 on the year, and he walks to bring up Francisco Lindor, who singles in the ninth run of the game. Tigers win 6-3.
It's painful, man. It's tough. That's why I don't bet unders.
True.
I told you.
The thing with the over is you always have a chance.
You always have a chance. It could be 0-0 going into the bottom of the ninth. You can get 11 runs in the top of the 10. I mean, it's just how life works. Plus, if you bet unders, then you just want to have a bad time. I mean, you're going to have a good time, Tom.
Maybe I'm a fan of double plays, you know? Good defense. Which
you're a fan of backdoor sliders getting rung up.
The expanded strike zone. Which baseball team do you think has cost you the most money in your life?
You know, I was thinking about this one earlier, and since I've been active for about a decade now with sports betting, I would say the back
21?
Half of I'm 25. Thanks, though, Tom. So I would say the first half of the decade was the Arizona Diamondbacks, because I couldn't tell you how many runners in scoring position Mark Trumbo left on base for me when I had the over in like a 5-year span. It's got to be up in the triple digits. You want to talk about a guy who I just needed you to get a ball in the air. Just give me a ball just 250 feet into center field. Just give me the run home. Give me the sack fly. Nope. Guy's going down on three pitches, swinging at sliders outside of the zone. Trumbo owes me. He owes me a pretty chunk, that's for sure. But I would say over these last 5 years, probably the Kansas City Royals. It actually got down to the point where I wouldn't even account for them playing. I'm looking at games. I'm not even looking at the Kansas City Royals, because I know that if I lose a game, that if I take the Kansas City Royals on, I'm going to send emails to front offices with a lot of exclamation points. Nah, not really. But, yeah, probably the Royals over the last 5 years. I'll be honest, Tom. I haven't really had much success with any MLB team over the past, I don't know how many years, but if we're talking the two teams that I have nightmares about from 2008 till 2013, the Diamondbacks and Mark Trumbo, and from 2014 to the current day, the Kansas City Royals, and it's not even close.
I guess there's a reason why you're waiting to football season. One guy that I have a tough time figuring out is not necessarily a team. I think one team this year giving people problems is probably the Astros, because on paper you think that they average 10 runs a game, and they haven't been scoring lately. And so, but with a guy like McCullers, I feel like he's either going 4 innings and giving up 5 runs, or he's going 7 innings, giving up 1 and striking out 12, and there's no real in between. And so,
yeah,
when you factor in him with the Astros, who are supposed to score a bunch and aren't scoring a bunch, that's probably I don't have the number in front of me, but that's probably a tough team to figure out total-wise.
Yeah, well, the same could be said about the Dodgers, in my opinion, when you talk about what happened pre-Corey Seager and all the injuries. Just kind of coming into the season, you know, you think that this team's all stacked. You know, the team that's coming off a World Series bid. You know, they have all these guys. They have Bellinger. They have Seager. There are guys in there that can get hot. And yet, I think, you know, 10, 11 games in, somebody had mentioned on Twitter that I kind of had to just absorb and sit there for a second. It was like an out-of-body experience. And it was like an asterisk with the whispers and says, I don't think this Dodgers offense is good. And I had to think about it. I was like, wow, he's actually probably not that wrong. It's more of a feast or famine type of offense, but not great. And you'd think that a team like that, you know, playing in Coors and playing in, you know, Chase Field, sans humidor, you know, they'd be good for 5-6 runs a game. But, man, you want to talk about perception. And the same can be said about the Astros. You think with the lineup from top to bottom, be able to put up, like I said, 5-6 runs. You think their team totals would be gold almost every day. But, you know, you probably got to wait for the 7 months for the ball to start flying. And then you got to get the juice balls back, obviously. I think the juice balls went away, Tom. Talk about that on the next podcast.
I've already talked about how, and this started before the season started, how I was down on the Dodgers this year, so I'm not all that surprised, especially with Justin Turner out. So Operation Food Dodgers has probably been profitable for some. Going away from gambling talk, you played back in the day. You were like a pony all-star when you were 12. Do you think you could hit Descalso fastball now? Because Descalso, he's the position player of choice that comes in and pitches for the Diamondbacks in blowouts. And what do you think? Could you hit him?
Mm, We talking one at bat? We talking one pitch?
Well, you get an at bat, yeah.
Oh, so I get an AB. You're not just—he's not saying, "Hey, I'm gonna, here's my fastball. You have to hit it." It's just I step up to the plate and see what I can do.
Right. What's gonna happen?
Do I get an aluminum bat or do I get a wood bat?
Wood.
Oh, I'm grounding out to third every time. I am rolling over on a changeup 100 times out of 100. I take the first. You know what I do, Tom? I take the first pitch. I hope he throws me 93 down the middle of the plate. I stand in there. I take it. I look at it. What'd you say?
You think he throws 93?
Well, no. I think he ups one. I think he gets. I think he if he gives one in the high 80s, low 90s, just to start off. You know, I look at it. I get that confidence. Just like, yeah, I saw it. Step out of the batter's box. Don't really bat an eye at it. Look at my coach. Disregard any sign he gives me. Basically just say, yeah, I took an 88 down the pipe. Not
so
a big deal.
Bellinger?
I'm standing in there. I'm tough. What?
Cody Bellinger what? Didn't take the use the take sign. He bunted down 4-0. Everybody got mad. So now you're Cody Bellinger. Not,
yeah, I
not
saw that.
Paying attention to signs.
Well, no. But you think my head coach is going to give me a sign up against a major league? Okay. So here's what's going to happen. I told you. I'm going to take strike one right down the pipe. I'm going to look at it. I'm going to say, yeah, that's a good pitch. Descalso, and then I obviously pitch two, I'm coming up absolutely hacking, and I don't care where the ball is. And I'm rolling over, and I'm grounding into third. Honestly, here's the thing, though. I ran a 4.65 in high school. I think I kind of I make a beeline down the line and make it close. I think they have to make it. They have to go to the replay and check it out. I think he calls me out. They go to the review, and they confirm it by a half step. So, yeah, I would ground out the third time.
Give me your Trevor Story story.
The Trevor Story story?
Yeah.
So, 10 years old, playing my first out-of-state baseball all-star tournament. We were playing in Irving, Texas. And the first game that we played, so it was 8 teams, round robin. We played the first night we were there. We played against the team that was hosting it, we were playing the team Irving, Texas, and this kid that was on the mound was throwing, I'm not kidding you, he must have been throwing, I'm talking 70s, like he was just throwing absolute BBs, and we ended up getting one hit by this kid named Trevor Story. And I only had one at bat that game because we got mercy ruled. We got absolutely tucked. So I probably had a 11, 12 pitch at bat. I mean, I am just fighting off heaters. He's throwing me absolute seeds everywhere, and I'm just making contact, just throwing my 777 at this ball, just trying to make contact, trying to stay alive. And then finally, on pitch number 12, the guy throws me a curveball. Tom, he's 10. He threw me a curveball, and he K'd me. And pretty much the thing is the running joke between my dad and I, it was, you know, hey, remember when, what do you think Trevor Story's doing? And this all happened, I'm talking out of the 7, 8, 9 years that me and both my brothers played baseball and football and everything. The one athlete that really kind of stuck out and that we always talked about was Trevor Story. Like, hey, what do you think Trevor Story is doing these days? And sure enough, the LSU days, then he gets drafted by the Rockies, and then when he made his debut and when he got promoted, it was just kind of one of those things where it was like, yeah, you know, you think you know Trevor Story, but you didn't get struck out by Trevor Story. And so when he had his coming out party, everybody was like, oh, my God, I love Trevor Story. And I was like, you don't even know the half of it. So it was kind of like jealousy. Like, I knew him first and you guys didn't. And now he's like a, you know, a negative 1.4 war player. And now it's like, yeah, well, that's what you get.
Do you think that you're the only person who ever struck out using a 777?
It wasn't a 777. When I was 10, I used my own Easton. It was a really bad bat.
Because people with 777s didn't strike out. They were the best players.
No, they were all but that's the thing. They were all contact hitter. I was aiming for the fences. Mm-hmm. I was a leadoff hitter though. Probably didn't like that too much. Next time we do this podcast, Tom, let's talk baseball bats, because I can go on for years talking about baseball bats and what I used and the do's and the don'ts and the birds and the bees, baby.
I was a stealth guy my last year.
Stealths were good. Depends on what color you got, though.
The red or...
You probably had the yellow.
The reddish?
Yeah, the reddish was good. Ride that. When I was 12, I used the Gen 1X Deuce. And when I was 13, I used the Air Response, which was green and yellow, and it just looked like a huge hornet was coming for your face.
Was
and
the
then
Gen
when
1
I was 14,
orange?
I used the... What's up?
Was the Gen 1 orange? Because I had an orange, or that maybe that was like a connection.
That connection was orange and blue. The Gen 1X Deuce was black and green and gold, and so was the Air Response, and I had those back-to-back. And then when I was 14, I used the Air Omaha. And that was black and red with a yellow star, and it was so goony. Kids feared me. I must have hit 460 that year, because kids were just grooving it to me. They didn't want any part of me.
So you have a Mario Kart sleeve. I'm surprised you haven't brought it up yet. Do you think that on your other arm you could do like a baseball bat sleeve?
That would actually be kind of cool. Yeah, maybe. If I ever got the lower part of my arm done, maybe. I don't know. I'm keeping the bicep because there's a cool vein that I have going through my bicep, and I don't want to get that covered up.
Cool.
True story.
Hey, what's it like being a White Sox fan right now?
Well, on one hand, it'd be cool to win something. On the other hand, it's also cool to be like, hey, we don't really care about winning now because nobody expects us to. So that's okay, because, like, during the whole Cubs series, it was kind of dumb to see everybody cheering for the Cubs, and then I was like, oh, I'm a Sox fan, so this isn't really great. But then I just kind of used the excuse of, well, we're trying to get a high draft pick so we can get, you know, some high school or prep arm out of Lakeview, Florida to add to our pitching rotation in 2026 while you guys win championships and have the best odds to win the pennant in the NL. So, I mean, like, you know, I'm trying to be patient. Do I want to be invested in baseball? Sure, that'd be kind of cool for once. But, like, sometimes you just got to pay your dues. Sometimes you got to be bad. I mean, remember when the Cubs only won, like, 60-something games and then they were competing for NL titles and World Series? I mean...
They won the World Series in 2016.
They did in 7 games versus the Indians. I was there.
All right, last one. Speaking of the Indians, what's going to happen first? Eloy Jimenez and Michael Kopech are both in the major leagues, or a team is in first place in the AL Central that is not the Cleveland Indians. Cleveland's up a game and a half over the Twins right now. I think the Indians are going to go wire to wire. Maybe you don't. And so maybe it's not until, like, when the Indians lose game one next year and the Orioles.
That's what I was going to say. That was my answer. It was going to be the Indians lose opening day next year while every other team wins. But, yeah, no. I was actually reading something yesterday on how the AL Central is, like, one of the worst divisions in, like, a long time. And it just doesn't make sense that only a couple years ago, like 2 years ago, that the Tigers, Royals, and Indians were all, like, really, really, really good. And now it's just like, you look at that division, it's just like tough to look at. Like, there's not really even any cool jerseys either, you know? But I'll say, I like that one. That was, you kind of took the words out of my mouth there. I thought I was going to be clever in that one, but you kind of stole my line right there. I'll say the Indians lose opening day next year.
All right. For real, last one. What's your Diamond Dynasty lineup right now?
Let me go look at it right now, because we got it up right now. I need to check our Diamond Dynasty lineup. I did. Uh-oh. Well, the roommate did some things to the lineup while I was gone, but it was George Springer, D. Gordon, Nelson Cruz, J.D. Martinez, Jose Abreu, Mike Moustakas, Paul DeJong, and Wellington Castillo, and pitcher. Just a lot of big boppers.
I guess. And D. Gordon.
Yeah, he gets on base, he's a game changer.
All right, Alex, thanks for your time and your insight. We'll have you back on during football season to talk your bad beats on this baseball podcast.
Yeah. Thank you, Tom. I really appreciate it.
Later.